Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. With all the industrial activity in our northern forests, integrated landscape management is one way to lessen our human footprint on the forest environment. Alberta Pacific's Don Pope talks about the progress we've made with ILM. And Willie Fast is one fellow who's tackling the touchy subject of how we can stop unmixing the mixed wood when replanting logged forests. And graduate student Troy McMullen is investigating the role of lichens in the management of old-growth forests. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. We put many demands on Alberta's forests these days. There's oil and gas exploration, oil sands mining, logging, recreational activities like hunting and fishing, and there's the growth of human settlement in remote areas. All these activities put pressure on wildlife and their habitat. Don Pope is a forester and a land management specialist with Alberta Pacific Forest Industries. For the last 2 years, he's been seconded to the Alberta government to help expand across the province the practice of integrated landscape management.
Integrated landscape management, Cheryl, is a combination of many things. It takes a planning cycle of many different industries, oil and gas, forestry, sand and gravel, peat harvesting, and tries to take the best of all the worlds to reduce the environmental impact of those activities on a landscape and all of the things that would normally use that landscape, from critters to ducks and everything else.
How long has it taken for this idea of integrated landscape management to really take hold in Alberta?
Alberta Pacific started integrated landscape management back in 99-2000 and put together a team of people to try and move the whole program forward from the aspect that there are better ways of doing business from industry to industry. That's originally where it started, with mostly oil and gas and forest industry people planning together to lessen the impacts as pressures came from the regulatory world.
Now, the last time I spoke with you, it was 2 years ago, and you were just starting off with a secondment from Alberta Pacific to the provincial government to help them take this idea of integrated landscape management and work it into sort of the way the province would want everybody to work. How is that now? What stage are you at with that?
Well, that's a good question, Cheryl. Sometimes I think we've gone a long way, and other times I think we're still standing still. We've moved integrated landscape management quite a ways along the curve from the aspect of it's no longer just industry to industry, like oil and gas and forestry planning together to reduce impacts. We have associations, the Alberta Chamber of Resources. We have university programs set up to help science enable better decisions on the landscape. And we have government involved very, very deeply in landscape management now, because they've realized the impacts can be lessened, and the problems that are coming clear to government from cumulative effects management are things that they don't know how to deal with from a regulatory approval point of view.
Well, can you give me some examples of what some of the effects would be on the landscape if you weren't taking this integrated approach?
Right now, just industry to industry, we've ended up tracking our land-based metrics on our forest management area for the last 7 years. And what we're finding, originally when the Chamber of Resources started a program, we thought we could get a 15% overlap between industries of saying that we would use the same land base for roads and access and things like that. And after 7 years of doing this, Cheryl, we've probably managed to hit upwards of almost 30%. We kind of doubled what our original projections were, and that wasn't because we didn't project right in the first place. It's just because we didn't know how much we could actually get together and do this job. What we're finding is that industry to industry is quite simple, because most of them are business arrangements. When you get government involved now and they're trying to add the regulatory framework side to the integrated land, moving them along has taken a little more time than maybe we thought it would have to start with, but the government's very interested. They've seen the benefits of integrated land management, and they have put together a project team, they've put together a charter for it, and they've also started working on integrated land management plans themselves at many different levels.
What do you see then as being some of the accomplishments?
Significant savings in land area cleared over time, and I'm going to say better environmental habitat on behalf of wildlife, from the aspect that a lot more of it is being saved just because it's being better managed at the approval process. The government has turned around now and put thought and consideration into landscape or land-based targets of amounts of land or area cleared for development. And it's not regulated yet, but they are certainly looking at processes to be able to enable that to happen and the approval process to support that.
Well, certainly seismic lines has been an issue. How have seismic line sizes changed?
Way back when we started in 96, 7, 8, they started to reduce the width of the seismic lines over time. And it started from about an 8-meter standard way back, and it came down to 7.5 and 6. And in 1999, 2000, 2001, ALPAC implemented our low-impact seismic rebate program where we would waive our timber damage assessments on those lines. And originally, we were kind of chastised by the forest industry saying that we were silly giving away our timber damage money. In reality, it's been one of the greatest land savers the province has ever seen. In our FMA alone, average clearing from seismic lines on a yearly basis has gone from about 6,400 hectares down to around 1,800 hectares. So that savings alone of pushing, 4,500 hectares of land not cleared for exploration purposes is a significant savings. And not only in our forest management area right now are we doing that, it's been adopted in all but three of the forest management areas across the province, as well as the government has implemented the program on lands administered by the Sustainable Resource Development Group.
Now, where ALPAC is doing its logging, of course, is rather unique for the province because you're also in the same area where all of the oil sands deposits are, and there's a lot of work going on there now to dig up the land so that people can get at the oil sands. What is that doing then for forestry as an industry, and then also trying to utilize this integrated landscape management idea at the same time?
What we've done there, Cheryl, is we've tried to take all of the plans that industry has brought forward to us on these larger developments. Most of those are triggered by an environmental impact assessment, whether it's a SAGD development or an open pit mine. And we've taken our own planning process a step to ensure that we take each one of those projects as are proposed, put it into our harvest planning sequence, whether it's 1 year, 2 years, or 5 years out, and then implement our program so we're harvesting with the oil companies and then their time frame so as that you aren't double-dipping the resource, so to speak. We have the same opportunities to get fiber to the mill as well as helping the oil and gas industry develop because they're going to clear and develop themselves. And now all it's really done is changed our planning process. What that means to us is that instead of planning green timber out in the forest management area somewhere, we've taken their plans and said, we'll plan this green timber on your lease and we'll work with you to develop it. It's led into various different business arrangements and good working relationships for industry, and it's been a very positive example.
How much, though, is the amount of wood that you're getting or going to get from those heavy oil or the oil sands areas?
Over the last 2 or 3 years now, Cheryl, the development in our region has been very high, and we're finding that about 30% of our wood comes from salvage development by other companies. Before 2012 or 2015 here coming up, we'll likely have 50% of our wood resource will come from salvage operations or integrated land operations with oil and gas companies.
What do you see now with the movement on the part of the government to really take this integrated landscape management idea and spread it out across the province? What are the issues that still need to be dealt with?
There's a significant number of issues there, Cheryl, because it's not easy to be able to say to industry, well, we want you to change and do business like this. Right now, industry to industry, it's fairly easy to get plans in and done and approved. When it comes to adding all of the other integrated land issues that come out there, thinking about things like agriculture or habitat or environment, or things like recreationalists want access to the land as much as everybody else, those other little bits of the process that have significant impacts on the landscape are harder to pull in there because people like recreationalists that want trails and generally in the past have used seismic lines or industrial access are beginning to realize that the industrial access wasn't necessarily built on the best recreational trail, and that makes it hard for the recreationists then to stay out of the way of industry or not impact industry's roads and things like that. Part of the ILM program has been to bring recreation in on the east slopes and places like that through Ghost Wipers Plan or the Castle Plan down there to the point where industry, government, and recreationalists are all planning on the same land base and putting trails in the right place and then using the land for the right reasons. Right now, if you took an average seismic line, probably 50% of it's on a lowland tract, and yet people are going to ride their quads and their dirt bikes through all of it as they go. if the trail was on high land that could sustain that type of traffic, there would be virtually no impact on the land, and yet the recreational program would continue on.
How about moving along new regulations or new policies?
The government's been trying very hard to adopt policy instruments right now that would help integrated land work. Things like area operating agreements and things like environmental field reports are processes the government's implemented over the last number of years that are actually, in a way, forcing integration on the landscape because they make you read and deal with others' concerns before you ever get there. The idea that you have to regulate it isn't necessarily something industry's asking for. You know, usually we want less regulation than more. But the idea that you can integrate and do a better job is something that they're not afraid to tackle.
Who else is looking at what Alberta is doing in terms of integrated landscape management?
Well, right now, Cheryl, it's actually very interesting because integrated landscape management is not only being well received within the province of Alberta. A lot of the techniques and the planning processes that we're using here are getting recognized throughout the world and certainly nationally or internationally. Presentations have been given to the Russians, to the Koreans on things like that where we have had leading planning exercises go on and delegations have come over to take a look specifically at how we did it, what we did, and what the results were. The Alberta government's getting very well recognized within Canada and nationally to the point where some of our techniques are actually being written down and published in other areas. Two or three articles have been written just by the group that I work with for how this all works and what's going on and been published in journals of our peers. It's kind of a good feeling some days.
And it wouldn't happen without the science behind it, would it?
Without the science, she's going way back to the start of it, Cheryl. Almost all of these projects were based on science that was developed here within our region and in Alberta. The University of Alberta, and in particular Stan Booten's ILM lab, have helped industry people like myself tremendously from the aspect of giving us a better awareness of what we need to avoid or what we can avoid and what is important to habitat and animals versus what's important to industry. It's been a very clear sign given to us by a whole bunch of the, you know, environmental community that we have to pay attention and we have to do a better job. I think industry is very aware of the impacts it has. They right now are quite willing to play by the rules and even step above that standard. I mean, to think that we only had to perform to the regulated standard isn't enough for most industries these days. Most of the people that I deal with are quite interested in doing a better job than the status quo.
Thank you very much, Don.
Oh, thank you, Cheryl. Thanks for your time.
That was Don Pope, a land management specialist with Alberta Pacific Forest Industries. In the fall, the Alberta landscape turns to green and gold. That green and gold color scheme really defines what the boreal mixedwood is. But silviculture, as currently practiced by forest companies and regulated by the government, could actually lead to the unmixing of the mixedwood. That's where the Alberta Mixedwood Management Association comes in. This is one of the new initiatives showcased at the recent conference hosted by the Sustainable Forest Management Network. Willie Fast is the scientific director for the Alberta Mixedwood Management Association.
The Mixedwood Management Association is a cooperative of 10 Alberta forest companies spread across northern Alberta, all of whom are active in the mixedwood forest section. So all of them have interests in aspen and spruce. And among other species, but those are the species of main interest. And they all have common research requirements and questions that they need answered. And so they came together about 5 years ago to pool resources and to be able to kickstart sort of a cooperative momentum towards addressing the questions that they have.
Well, what are those questions?
The big ones is... How do we grow mixedwoods from scratch? Because a lot of the mixedwoods that we see currently on the landscape have occurred over a long period of time following natural disturbances, largely fire. And the current policy requires companies after harvesting to regenerate mixed woods if they have logged a mixed wood. And that's a big question. How do you do that? So we sponsor a lot of research in terms of not only what are the treatments required to generate those kinds of forests again, but then once we have them generated, how do they develop over time, and how do we develop the tools to be able to project how those things will develop?
One of the things that I've heard about over the years is this question of unmixing the mixed woods, and that's a bad thing. Perhaps you could explain that.
There's a lot of literature that says that there's value in growing stands in mixed species configurations. Nature grows them that way. So who are we to say that because spruce is an important species, why do we want to grow these monocultures? We're trying to, on the one hand, meet the demands of the forest industry. On the other hand, we're trying to emulate what Mother Nature has given to us. And Mother Nature has given us intimate or patchy mixed woods. And so the regulators have developed a lot of policy saying, because that's what Mother Nature gave us, that's what we want to have back. And so the companies, by default, by operating on the public crown land, they need to follow that policy, and so they're forced sort of into trying to recreate what Mother Nature gave us.
Now, one of the things that I heard today in the presentations from the different speakers is actually a concern about the regulations that are in place now, that perhaps they aren't exactly what you need for following this mixed wood. What is the problem with the current regulation?
The current regulation if the reforestation policy is followed the way it is currently written, it will result largely in the unmixing of the mixed woods. So we will produce pockets of pure stands scattered across the landscape. And if it's true that there's value in having more intimate mixtures of species across the landscape, the current policy likely will not give us those.
Isn't one of the problems, too, is that when you come into a mixed wood, you're actually in the middle of what the forest transition would be in terms of succession? How do you deal with that?
Well, that speaks to the crux of the problem. A lot of the stands that forest companies in Alberta are harvesting are mid-rotation stands that have had time to develop into the mixed wood condition and that initially have come through some kind of a stepped development through starting possibly with pure deciduous, with introduction of spruce over time, resulting in a mixed wood later on. And now we're being forced to meet in the young condition what is more typically a much older forest condition on the natural landscape.
Well, you're the scientific director for the Mixed Wood Management Association. What are some of the things that you're working on now?
We have a whole suite of studies currently going on. One of the biggest and most interesting recent ones is the association has sponsored the hiring of a postdoctoral position at the University of Alberta. That's Ken Statt, and he will be instrumental in continuing the development of the growth model called Mixed Wood Management Growth Model, or MGM. And so the association is actually really excited about that model because it's going to become a tool by which we can better project the development of these stands. So that's one pretty exciting development that we're currently undertaking. Another one is the development of what is called a silviculture guide. And the silviculture guide is a compendium of all the existing knowledge of ecology and silvics, and not so much growth and yield, but silviculture practice. And it will be a computer-based tool that practitioners can use to help them make decisions on what kind of treatments they should impose and how to grow the kinds of forests that they're required to grow.
Now, the Mixed Wood Management Association is made up of Alberta companies and partners. What application does this have across the country? Are other provinces concerned about mixed wood management?
The mixed wood management issues that we're dealing with are really boreal forest issues. And the boreal forest spreads right across Canada from northeastern BC right into Ontario and Quebec across the northern band of the prairies. And the Mixed Wood Management Association is sponsoring research by scientists from across that range. So we have collaborative research projects going with people from Ontario, from Manitoba, from Alberta, from BC. And so it really is becoming a vehicle to coordinate a research effort right across Canada.
Well, I thought at one point some of the people here were going to come to blows, especially over the regulations. It's a very political issue.
It's a really political issue, and you'll notice that it's unfortunate that, particularly in this session, there weren't more Alberta Forest or Sustainable Resource Development people here. It's really a hotbed issue, and it's going to take a long time to sort this all out.
Well, thank you very much, Willie.
No problem. My pleasure.
That was Willie Fast, Scientific Director for the Alberta Mixed Wood Management Association. The next time you buy a bottle of perfume, consider the lowly lichen. Lichens are used for a variety of purposes, but are grossly understudied. Troy McMullen is a graduate student in Resource and Environmental Studies at Dalhousie University. He presented his findings on lichens as a keystone species at the recent Sustainable Forest Management Network conference.
Well, largely because there are ones that we know are unique to old-growth forests. So if you're looking at ways of managing old-growth forests, they just fit well, because as a forest develops, they provide new microhabitats for new lichens to be present. So they're good indicators to show the structural complexities of the forest.
What are some of the things that you found out about lichens?
Wow, I mean, that's a loaded question. I could go on for some time. I found out that they're extremely understudied, and they are extremely valuable. They're used by, well, we can look at them in a utility way. We use them. Humans use them for a variety of things, for a variety of products.
Like what?
Like perfumes. There's the slow release agent in a lot of perfumes, especially higher end ones, comes from lichens. Prior to synthetic dyes, lichens were the only thing that were used. But I prefer not to even consider the utility of them, but the utility of them for the forest, they're essential. They're food for a number of insects, and homes for a number of insects. They're homes for a number of mammals as well. Bats, for instance. Caribou feed on them almost exclusively. And they're nitrogen fixing. They're one of the few nitrogen fixing elements in the forest, which is very exciting. And so often they're overlooked and they're not considered. So often land surveys are conducted and they're not considered. And largely that's because there aren't people with the skills out there to identify them. That they're very difficult. They're inconspicuous. So it's sometimes you have to go to the environment to find them, as opposed to having them lead you to the environment. You have to know which ones occur where and then look very closely once you get there to find them.
What role do the lichens actually play then in forest succession?
Well, they are the pioneers of forest succession, because without them we wouldn't have any forests, because they're the only thing that can inhabit a bare rock. They get all their nutrients from the atmosphere and the water that watches over them, so they don't require any root system to go into any soil. So if there is a bare rock, any kind of major disturbance, the lichens will take hold first, and it could be generations of lichens that go that happen before enough soil is created for the first plants from there. And it'll just be a successional thing until there's enough soil for trees and the whole forest to grow. So,
how old can some of these lichens be?
Up to thousands of years. It's amazing, because they're a fungus and an algae working together individually. They're two very unique species, and they come together and form something completely unique that lives for decades, hundreds, thousands of years longer than they would otherwise. They can inhabit virtually every environment on Earth.
On the Bowater lands, how many species do you think you're dealing with?
Oh, I've found 144 to date, and those are only epiphytes, so just the ones growing on the trees. We know now, there's been over 1,000 identified in Nova Scotia alone. And so these are really specific environments, very unique environments, and they're all the same environment that I was trying to get to. So you'd consider that it would be fairly limited. And I'm not considering the ones that are on rocks, the ones that are on soils. So I'm looking at you know, probably a third of what would be in the forest, and I found 144 species.
Now, I understand you've come up with some new species, too.
Yeah, well, those ones are in the process. I can't say that they're actually new until they're published, but we're convinced that we found three new worldwide. It seems as though we found one new genus. Unless we shoehorn it into another genus, then it will be new. And it's hard to say. There's no formal list saying these are the lichens of Nova Scotia. Therefore, it's hard to say you found new ones in Nova Scotia. So I've compiled a list of all the publications, of all the collections that have been done in Nova Scotia since the 1800s. And based on that, and then there seems to be about 10 new ones to the province that I found in the study. And there also appears to be one new to North America. But I'm also waiting for confirmation. I've sent a lot of those out to other specialists to just double check.
Are you at a point yet where you could make a recommendation to Bowater as to how they should include lichens in their strategy that they're developing for old growth?
Absolutely. I've already created for them a field guide for their foresters to take into the bush with them. It's a little hand field guide with good photos, large photos, so they can compare. I mean, sometimes you can't tell exactly what they are, but they can match things up and get fairly close, take photos, bring them back, so that we can start to identify what's out there. And they've already agreed to the fact that if they find anything new that's very rare, or then we'll sit down at the table and discuss conservation if it's a new or rare species, which is exciting. But whether or not I can base them large-scale management decisions, I think that this is only be able to be a piece of a larger scale. You couldn't base a management or conservation strategy on these alone.
Thank you very much, Troy.
My pleasure.
That was Troy McMullen, a graduate student at Dalhousie University. His research on lichens is supported by the Bowater Mersey Forest Company and the Sustainable Forest Management Network. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the NSERC ACR Integrated Landscape Management Research Chair, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Alberta Innovation and Science, Alberta Ingenuity, the University of Lethbridge, Alberta Research Council, Alberta Gaming Research Institute, ICOR, the Informatic Circle of Research Excellence, Alberta Conservation Association, Calgary Technologies, Inc., Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, and Science Alberta Foundation. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Crocher.